silhouette and burn your cigarette. It's as close as I can get to never forgetting you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. No major guests tonight in terms of meeting players, but we do have a guy who has a lot of insight and a lot of intelligence into hockey ongoings and certainly a lot of the stuff that happens around the game, as we bring back a Mr. Jason Pajak to the show. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I am all right. We're going to go over everything today that has to do with the NHL starting up in about a week's time. It'll be a week from Saturday that they get everything going again. I'm going to be honest, I'm not super excited about this, but we'll go through some of the stuff right away and start talking about that. Before we get into that, though, everybody's still healthy in your camp, Jason? Everybody doing well there?
Yeah, everybody in this bubble here, they're all okay. There have been a couple tests here and there, but I think everyone's all right now and just kind of being safe. And
your NHL bubble is safer than the actual NHL bubble, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's awesome. So let's get into this, because I think we've got a lot to go over today and certainly a lot to talk about. I'm sure we're going to get into some pretty good discussions here. But let's start. Obviously, Edmonton, Toronto selected as the two hub cities. We're going to get everybody and all the teams going there sometime this weekend. It sounds like they're going to quarantine for at least 7 days before playing exhibition games towards the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday ideas before starting up on Saturday. So I got to ask you, with the numbers going up in both cities, in both Edmonton and Toronto, for the number of COVID cases that we're seeing in those two cities recently, with bubble workers going in and out of said bubbles, thereby kind of not creating bubbles, does this whole idea of restarting the NHL the way the NHL has proposed it make any sense to you in terms of trying to protect everybody who's involved?
I mean, it would make much more, like, the way that they've done it, I think they're trying to match, you know, they're trying to get the best of both worlds. They're trying to get sports back. They're trying to keep everyone having some semblance of freedom and normality, but also keeping some structure in terms of keeping the risk down. And you're really, when you try and do that, a lot of holes pop up. I mean, the thing that really should have been done is you get to the hotel, the doors are locked, you are stuck in there, you cannot go outside. Once you've established the bubble inside a hotel or a set of hotels, as long as people don't come in and out, like, the players should be free to go wherever in the building that they want. You know, you could have staff that stay in the building, you know, people that are cooking for the players and whatever. If you can keep that, the in and out to a minimum, and I'm meaning like not even the janitor comes and goes, like, that's what would be the safest option. But the fact that you're having people that are going home, you know, especially in downtown Toronto, like, I don't know if you've ever gone around downtown Toronto. There are lots of people there. Walk down the street and you're walking within 6 feet of hundreds of people. Even right now with, you know, things are the way that they are in Toronto, people are being relatively smart about social distancing and then not going out if they have to. But really, you're kind of getting in a system where you're almost asking for a problem, like, especially with, you know, with Edmonton. The fact that the amount of travel that's going to be inherent in getting from the hotels to the rink and then from the rink back, there's still just this risk that's going on. And then with Toronto, just the number of people that are packed into that area, it's you're asking for trouble.
So the NHL is basically committed to testing players almost daily, basically, in terms of how they're going to try and sort of monitor this with the player side of it. It goes back to exactly what you said, but the number of people coming in and out of the bubble, though, with, you know, whether it be hotel workers, whether it be cooks, whether it be, you know, anybody that's basically in and out. It's going to be a lot harder to sort of manage all of those people in and out without having some sort of widespread testing that they can do before they even get into the bubble. According to the NHL, some have estimated there will be upwards of 2,000 tests per day that the NHL will pay for. It's not coming out of Ontario or Alberta's budgets or any of their test capacity. But looking at that, I mean, we're talking about, again, I hate to say it this way, we're talking about a bubble that legitimately will protect the players as long as the players are the only ones in it. I don't know how you control everybody else going in and out without having some sort of proof of test or some sort of test done prior to them getting into that bubble.
Yeah. And, you know, if you get tested, we all know that it takes 24 to 36 hours to get the test results back. So you're not going to be able to just, like, you know, it's not like, unless you're the blood sugar test.
I was going to say, unless you're the NBA right now, because apparently they can get those tests back in like 2 hours. So I don't know how they're doing it, but.
Yeah. I mean, to be the devil's advocate, if you're able to somehow keep the players and team staff separate from the staff that's coming in and out of the buildings, like obviously having housekeeping staff going room to room and cleaning things is probably not going to be an option right now, because you can't have that cross-contamination, having somebody that's been outside the building going in these kind of intimate areas where the players are. Like if you bring in cooks and everyone's eating kind of at the hotel, if the hotels, obviously they have restaurants, they're Toronto hotels, but if you're having individuals that are cooking for the players coming in and they're able to keep separate and they're able to, you know, wear masks and, you know, make sure everything is sanitized and clean and ready to go, you can cut down that risk significantly. Just the problem being that at kind of every turn, it seems that, you know, either our understanding of COVID-19 changes or somebody takes a little bit of a liberty. Like we know these are 20-something, 30-something year olds, you know, young men. Like they're gonna flout the rules, they're gonna do whatever. Like we had that video, I think it was Jake Virtanen out at a club not that long ago.
Yeah.
Like these are not the type of people that you can seriously trust to be safe. And I know that there are people like Jonathan Taves who voted against the return to play because he just wasn't confident in the ideas and they didn't have enough answers to satisfy him. But you know, it's just, you're walking a fine line here with, you know, who comes in and out that we've already seen with the MLS and we've already seen with other leagues that have tried to restart that this, unless you can make a really tight bubble, people are going to test positive and with the nature of sports, it's going to run rampant.
Well, and I mean, we're talking about other bigger problems coming up as well. I mean, obviously there's going to be a central lounge in each hotel for players to basically congregate in to sort of, you know, get away from their rooms because they're all going to be in their rooms sort of isolated by themselves. But there will be this sort of central lounge area where players can congregate. Is there going to be social distancing there? Will they have to wear their masks? How do we, you know, work around those problems, which I totally get. The bigger problems are the guys that have already said they're going to be leaving and coming back. Washington Capitals forward Lars Eller said he's going to leave the Toronto bubble after the season restarts because he wants to be with his wife for the birth of their second child. Eller's wife, Julie, is due on August the 8th, which, again, assuming the Capitals get there, would be their third round robin game against the Boston Bruins. I mean, I guess they will get there, but you look at that and you go, if he's going to leave, what does he have to do to get back in then? And if he does get back in, how long does he have to wait before he can get back on the ice after that? Mm-hmm. Like, is there – I get the idea of wanting to be there for your team, wanting to be there for your wife. I get the family versus responsibility of a job sort of thing. But if you're just going to have guys go in and out, you're not creating a bubble. Mm-hmm. You're simply just creating a revolving door of – you're basically gambling at this point that somebody's not going to bring it in.
Yeah, and I think at this point, in that specific case with Lars Eller, what is the actual point in you coming and playing these round-robin games that essentially mean, for those teams, the round-robin teams, this essentially means nothing.
Right.
If they were in the play-in, I would feel a little bit different, but what's the difference between you just staying away, letting your team play the round-robin without you, and then coming back after your child is born, and then resuming play when the games actually start to matter much more. So, but in terms of getting back into the bubble, I know that there is you have to pass
four consecutive negative COVID-19 tests, plus you have to spend 4 days in your hotel room quarantining by yourself.
And we know for a fact that most likely in those 4 days, somebody is just going to leave their hotel room or someone's going to go in because that's just the way things work.
The bigger issue to me is that we require people to quarantine up to 14 days right now because you can be asymptomatic for the longest time. And you can still test negative based upon the tests that you get. Like, 4 days is nothing, especially if he gets it walking through the airport on the way back, for example. He may test negative for the first 4 days, and then all of a sudden on day five has all the symptoms that are required. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Like, this isn't – I get it. Yeah. Your family's important, and I'm never going to hold that against a player. I will never, ever say they shouldn't go be with their wife or be there for the birth of their child or anything like that. But like you said, these games are just to establish 1 through 4 in terms of the seedings. Lars Eller doesn't have to be there. Let Lars Eller take that first week off and let him come back after that.
Mm-hmm. Like, I understand why the round robin games have to happen. Just to be fair and let everybody play and to establish the seeding, even though the seeding should have, especially in the East, should have been established a long time ago and was established a long time ago.
Right.
I get it, but it's still just like, why? Why do we have to incur this extra risk just to have these extra games?
I mean, I guess getting everybody into the bubble is important, and then having them play, obviously, you have to have them play at some point and get a bit. But again, if I'm you know, Todd Reirden right now in terms of head coach of the Capitol, right? You know, I'm telling my guy, telling Lars Eller, like, dude, you might as well just stay home show up for the first round of the playoffs. Don't even worry about the round, you know, this round robin that we're doing or whatever. Just go be with your wife, go have the next baby, and we'll see you when everything's done after that. Like, take your 5 or 6 days, and we'll be fine after that. We have enough players to cover for you.
Yeah, and I mean, if I were the NHL, you know, when I was originally hearing about these ideas and having the bubbles, my thought was, okay, get the teams together, lock them in a hotel for 14 days leading up to when the first games are held. Just put them in the hotel, let them quarantine for 14 days, charter them a bus to take them to the airport, get them on their chartered plane, fly them in to the hub city, get a bus to drive them to the hotel, and just limit the number of potential contacts. Now you're going in, like, players are still going home at this point, right?
There are players. Well, they're still in their own sort of testing facilities and arenas right now, but they'll start traveling this weekend. And if anybody sort of, you know, either gets an injury or whatever, yeah, like, they could be leaving the next day, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's you're going about this. The NHL's going about this in such a weird way that it's you're putting too much trust in people when, A, the amount of dollars that's on the line right now and the health of people that's on the line. Like, so one screw up could sink the NHL playoffs, and they're just allowing this to happen.
So here's the question, and I don't know what the answer is because I'm not in the economics business of sports in terms of knowing how much they actually spend. According to a report by John Shannon yesterday, in order to set up the two bubbles, in order to set up the two hub cities right now, it's cost the NHL $50 to $70 million. How much money do you think they would have left on the table if they just told the sponsors and the networks that we're not doing that this year? We're just going to go into 2021 and hopefully everything will be fine after that. We'll figure everything out as we get to that restart date of the new season. If they left more, if there's more money on the table than $70 million, the NHL has got to figure out what they're going to do for 31 cities after this, let alone two. You've got 31 different cities and 31 different problems to figure out after that. Well, yeah, soon to be 32. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, it, to me, I mean, I would hope there are very few sponsors that would care that much. I mean, the companies that sponsor the NHL are already hit hard enough by the economic downturn that this pandemic has caused, that I don't know if they're going to want to spend the money or they'd be happy spending the money that they owe the NHL. They probably want to hold on to that. I honestly think it's more that the ownership groups are saying, okay, we want our money, so let's do this thing. It's more them than the sponsors, unless you're, you know, Rogers, who has billions of dollars tied into this whole endeavor.
Well, but that's the thing, though. If you're looking at the NHL and you're going, we don't want to refund any of this money to the networks. I get that. I understand that there's big money on the line here in terms of some of those network contracts. That billion, you know, $8 billion or $6 billion contract that Sportsnet signed with, that's a huge amount of money. But at the end of the day, I don't think Sportsnet is going to. I mean, they're going to complain that maybe they didn't get their money's worth. But I don't think they're going to complain if it's going to put people's lives at risk. Like, that's the thing that I don't think people are going to get it in terms of is this something good? Is this the right idea if there's a chance that people could get sick? And I'm hoping that they won't. Knock on wood that I'm hoping that they won't. But at the same time, though, we're talking about isolating from your family for 6 weeks. We're talking about, you know, the potential of other people coming in, bringing it in. We're talking about, and I'll bring this up because we're going to talk about this next, players potentially being allowed out of the bubble to go on prearranged trips away from the hotel, such as playing golf. I get you're in a small group, and I get that you're with your, you know, your own people again, but we're talking about the chance of, again, just being exposed to the virus.
Like, it's, they legitimately just had a win. If they sat home and did nothing and just canceled the season, that's a win. People weren't going to, obviously people would complain, but they had a very good reason to do that. Yet they're still going out and trying to salvage this season. And it just boggles the mind. Like, this is not this should not be a monetary issue at this point. It's a health issue. And as we're seeing, you know, today, finally Quebec dropped under 2,000 cases. But still across the board in Canada, at least the numbers are climbing. Like, it's just not the time to do this.
So I have the rules that they've basically come up with in terms of what they have here. The season, this restart is expected to end no later than October 4th, which, again, that means, you know, you're in Canada for 2 months and in stuck in your hotel for 2 months, which is fine, I guess, in terms of what's happening.
Most people have done that in their houses. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, we've done that for however long now, and okay, sure. But I mean, now we're talking about hotel, no family, no nothing to do. Hotels are going to fall in that sort of phase four secure zone. It'll include restaurants, practice facilities, and two arenas where the games will be played, which is fine. I have no issue in terms of what's going on with that. As per the CBA and details provided by the NHL, though, here is what you can do. Okay, now this, and again, this is baffling to me, but okay. Each team is permitted to bring a maximum of 52 people inside their designated phase four secure zones. So if you're adding up the total of number of teams, which we always do, there are 12 teams, 24 teams, so 12 times 52 at hotels, at split between two hotels. 31 of them are players, the rest made up of ownership, coaches, executives, and staff. A full list of traveling parties must be submitted by to the NHL as of July 13th, as training camps open. So if your name wasn't on the traveling party, you weren't going. And if you wanted to be on there, too bad now. There's nothing you can do about it. But I look at that and I go, from July 13th on, those 52 people should have had no contact with anybody else.
Yep. Should have.
And we're not seeing that. We're seeing players go about their regular business, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I guess it's fine anyway. At least one physician, one security representative, and one club phase four club compliance officer, which, whatever. And one content creator, which means you have a video or a graphic, you know, graphics designer, whatever, some social media person, has to be included among the 52-person traveling party. Why can't the NHL just supply that person?
Yep.
Like, I get the security rep, I get the physician, and I get the compliance officer to make sure people are on that floor of the hotel are doing everything they're supposed to not be exposed. Why does the content creator matter? I don't understand that. Whatever.
Like, we're getting to a point where does the team social media guy have to be there? Like, it's a job you can do from your house.
Remotely, exactly, yeah.
Like, give one of the players access to the Instagram, or like somebody that's close to one of the trainers, I don't know.
Whatever, somebody.
And just let them go about it, and you can just tweet from your living room watching the game.
I would think that would be easier, but yeah. All individuals must be tested 3 times, 48 hours apart between each test in the 7 days prior arrival to the bubble. So during this week, players have been tested over and over and over again, and we'll see if anybody's got it. As we know, phase three had 2 positive positive results, but phase two had like 20. So we'll see if the NHL is getting better at maybe controlling their bubble. Upon arrival, everyone living inside the secure zones will be tested daily via nasal swab, as well as daily have daily temperature checks and symptom screenings. Any player who refuses to follow the testing and monitoring protocol may be subject to permanent removal from the bubble, which I would think maybe should be absolutely subject to permanent removal.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't follow the monitoring and the testing protocol, you can leave.
If you're not going to follow the rules, you can leave. This
right.
This is a privilege, not a right.
Right. We are asking you to come here and follow the rules so everybody stays safe. You don't want to stay safe? There's the door right there. There's your only other option. So individuals who might have direct or indirect contact, this is where we were just talking about, will also be tested daily. This includes but is not limited to housekeeping staff, bartenders, servers, hotel security, arena ice crew, arena food and beverage staff, and bus drivers. So it looks like they're going to test daily, but when are we getting those results back?
Yeah. Are you going to wake everybody up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Swab. What time's the first game? First game's
it'll be at noon. 11:30 or 11 a.m. Central time, noon Eastern time on August 1st. Yeah.
So for the Eastern games, you're going to wake every bus driver and hotel busser up at what? Like 4 o'clock in the morning, give them the nasal swab, and then make them sit in their bedroom until you get the okay.
Results, like, yeah, until the results come back, I guess. Yeah,
like it's just let them stay. They're working at a hotel. Let them stay at the hotel.
I agree with that. I think that would be easier, but who knows? Whatever. Anyone who tests, this is the part that I have a real problem with, and this is the one rule that I legitimately circled when I first saw this. Anyone who tests positive will be isolated immediately. Okay, good move.
Fine.
Though the NHL maintains that, quote, singular or even multiple isolated positive tests will not halt play, unquote. What exactly would that mean if you have multiple isolated positive tests? Because now you have essentially symptomatic people in multiple locations.
Yeah. So let's say Artemi Panarin tests positive for the Rangers, Alex DeBrincat for Chicago, and Matt Barzal for the Islanders. That's 3 cases in 3 different places.
On 3 different floors of the hotel.
Yeah. So that's not going to halt play, but with that player around their teammates, we know hockey, that virus has already spread.
Right. And beyond that, no mention of any contact tracing either. Like, if these 3 guys were hanging out in that central lounge area for the players, maybe it was somebody in there that had it, that gave it to those guys. But no mention of contact tracing whatsoever for the multiple isolated positive tests. Mm-hmm. Which I go, that's the whole point. You need to trace if you have tests.
And it's easy to do because they're all in the same hotel together.
Right, exactly. But I'm not the NHL. I don't think of this stuff. Players are going to be living in single occupancy rooms with no roommates. Players may not enter each other's rooms, and each team will be assigned a designated floor. So I guess somebody's going to have to monitor those little doors between the hotel rooms, because I'm almost certain that somebody's going to be like, yo, dude, you want to play some NHL? Or, hey, dude, you want to play some Call of Duty? I mean, think of Ehlers and Laine. Like, those two all are playing against each other all the time.
Mm-hmm. Like, I can totally see Paul Maurice walking up and down the hallway at the Jets hotel, just like on his phone, making sure that Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine don't cross the hallway to each other's rooms.
Housekeeping will only be provided to rooms every 3rd day. Okay, so you're cutting it down, which I get. No big deal. But each person will have, here's again, red flags all over the place. Each person will have sustained access to contactless room service delivery. Room service delivery is fine. Room service is great. As well as delivery from local restaurants. What?
Okay, for the housekeeping, these are all adults. They can clean their own room. Thank you very much.
Again, I'm okay if you want to come in and change the linens and do all that stuff. Room service, entirely fine. Contactless room service is fine in terms of what you're going to do with that. Just drop it at the door and walk away sort of thing. Delivery from local restaurants opens up the bubble.
And then they're talking about bringing in food trucks as well. Like, that's just adding cracks and holes into this bubble that you don't need to have.
According to TSN, provided that social distancing is followed, hotel bars and restaurants will be open every day within the bubble. Players will be able to access hotel pools and fitness centers. What? What? Okay, fine, whatever. I'm not going to get into that. That's just, we don't open gyms in the to the public right now. Why are we opening the fitness centers to NHL players?
Well, they are open, but some of them, you have to schedule the time that you
go. Yeah. So there, I mean, unless there's going to be a security dude at the door checking off names as you come in, like, this looks like a problem as well.
Mm-hmm. And those fitness centers are tiny, so I don't know how they're going to social distance.
Bubble inhabitants will have access to outdoor areas to walk, exercise, and mingle on campus, but individuals may only interact socially with people from their own traveling party for the first 5 days upon arrival. Well, the first 5 days upon arrival is like Monday.
Yeah.
After that, we're free to mingle with anybody? Is that how it's going to work? Again, where is this bubble that they're talking about?
They're trying to keep the entire Eastern Conference and the entire Western Conference in a conference-sized bubble, I guess.
If you're just going to split it down the middle, like, I mean, who cares about cities at that point? All individuals must wear non-medical masks or facial coverings inside the bubble when outside their hotel rooms. Yes, unless eating, drinking, or engaged in exercise. Coaches, off-ice officials, and broadcasters may remove their masks during games, except that most of the coaches are of older ages, mm-hmm. and most of the on-ice officials you probably don't want sick, considering you can't bring in other officials.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. I don't understand these rules. You do a good thing by saying all individuals must wear masks, and mm-hmm. then you go ahead and say, yeah, well, to hell with the old guys and to hell with the officials.
Well, that's why you have guys like Jim Rutherford not going. Like, he said that he is not going because he's in that at-risk group.
Right.
And he hasn't even considered the fact that if the Penguins get to the conference final or the final, he's actually going to be there.
Right.
Because it's the risk to him.
Only authorized personnel will be allowed to enter or exit the designated bubble. Who is authorized personnel? Players, children, and partners will be permitted to join a bubble only during the conference finals and Stanley Cup final at Edmonton. Here's where I have a significant problem with that. Because in the U.S., school starts on August 20, whatever it is, 21st or 28th or something like that.
That's insane.
If the conference finals and Stanley Cup final are going to allow children in, and we're talking about teachers in the U.S. refusing to go to school because they're already worried about getting COVID. What are you doing, NHL?
Not being smart is what the NHL is doing.
That to me right there, and I get it, the players want to be with their families. What NHL player is going to tell their family to pull their kids out of school during the conference final or Stanley Cup final to come and spend time with dad at the hotel? And B, if they're already in school and there's a chance that COVID-19 is being passed around the school just because of how kids interact with each other, would you want your kids there?
No. It boggles the mind because you're putting all these rules in place and you're trying to be safe about it. You're doing it in a way that maintains, you know, some semblance of the personal freedoms we had before. Well, exceptional times call for exceptional solutions.
Right.
And, you know, if, like, here's the thing. If you, families should not be allowed. No. Like, full stop. Like, I'm sorry that you would want to see your family. I understand. Like, if I were an NHL player, I would not be going to this tournament.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. You're all millionaires as well. I'm pretty sure you can afford FaceTime.
Yeah, you can afford a data overage there. Like, you're either going to, what it should have been is you either sacrifice the fact that if you go all the way through and you win the Stanley Cup, you're not going to see your family until October, or don't play, do the smart thing and stay home with your family.
And again, they had a chance to do that, and the NHL, the NHLPA opted to come back to play. They voted for it. So TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Saravelli is also reporting that the NHL is planning, quote-unquote, league-approved excursions both inside and outside the bubble, unquote.
Going for a field trip.
Saravelli has suggested that the outings will be something along the lines of a designated tea time at a local golf club where social distancing and face covering would be mandatory. You've not created a bubble if you're going to allow players to go in and out whenever they want. It's as simple as that.
That's not a bubble. Like, it's – and anybody that's saying, oh, well, they can all be, like, transferred there by a bus and, you know, they can be smart and stay on, like, a closed golf course together, like – anybody that's been on a school field trip knows you just lose people through no fault of your own. Like, you could just turn around and suddenly Evgeny Kuznetsov is just gone. He went to the bathroom, saw something, and he just, like, walked off because he wanted to get a drink, and you don't know where he is.
I mean, what about the guys that don't want to golf when they're in Toronto or in Edmonton? What if they just want to, you know, go see a movie or something? Like, what are they going to do? I mean, again, do I have to sit alone? Like, I want to hang out with the guys. I want to hang out and watch a movie or whatever. No, that's not allowed. You can't do that.
You got to do the NBA thing where they literally build a barbershop.
That's
and
true, yeah.
Build a movie theater at Disney World and have all the newest movies streaming there.
You know what? If that's what it takes, then that's what it takes, I guess. See, and for me, I mean, again, we'll move in sort of a different direction here now. But for me, I look at it and I go, okay, like, we've only talked about the players and the teams as to what they've got to deal with. My issue is that, and I know Winnipeg's opening up. We're talking about phase four here in Manitoba already.
We really shouldn't be, but we are.
I know we shouldn't be. I agree with that. I think it's ridiculous that we're moving ahead this quickly. But we're talking about a phase four here in Manitoba. Other places are moving into phase three. For example, the Ontario region moving into phase three. Most people like to gather together to watch hockey and mm-hmm. certainly talk hockey and certainly do all that. That means that bars and restaurants and lounges likely will be more populated. And with COVID numbers sort of going up in all the major centers across Canada right now, I'm not really excited to open up a lounge or a bar or a restaurant and mm-hmm. hang with my friends right now, only because I think that's just asking for trouble. If the NHL thinks that this is a good idea to have this bubble and let their players or, you know, let their players go in and out of the bubble, obviously cities don't care because they're just trying to get their economies back in gear. Mm. But how on earth do you expect restaurants and bars and to sort of monitor the social distancing and everything that's required when watching hockey? Like, this, there are going to be people that are legitimately going to get thrown out of bars all the time if that's the case. Mm-hmm. And good, mm-hmm. I mean, good for the bars that they do that. But for the ones that don't, we're asking for problems again.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, we already are having bars and restaurants that are violating social distancing and they're violating provincial ordinances about social distancing and about cleanliness. So you're just adding to that. Like, I recently saw that a good thing is that the King's Head is only allowing people from Winnipeg inside the building.
Right, yeah. They're doing the tracing through people's driver's license, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's one step. But, you know, you get into a bar, you get into a pub, people start drinking, and then the game comes on, your team's playing, and suddenly social distancing is thrown out the window.
Big goal scored, high fives, all that kind of stuff.
Hugs, like, you're asking people who are in a position where they do not have control of their full mental faculties to be respecting health ordinances and social distancing. And that's just not going to happen.
Like I said, I think it's going to be, at least for the first few weeks anyway, I think it'll be ugly, but we'll see how mm-hmm. it goes as time carries on. But enough of the down and dreary, because, I mean, there are going to be games played regardless of whether we think they should be or shouldn't be regardless. And we're going to sort of get into that in a little bit here. August 1st, there will be 5 games. The NHL will kick off that restart. The New York Rangers and Carolina Hurricanes will kick things off at 12 Eastern, 11 a.m. from Toronto. Thoughts on the weird start times and how they'll have an effect on teams and players, Jason? Do you think it'll matter to the players at all?
I don't think so. Like, the thing people have been talking about, or the thing that hasn't really been kind of an issue, is the players that they're all coming back at the same time. They've all had the same amount of time off. They're all coming in and they're all able to now establish a new routine. I mean, if you keep consistent. Like it looked up until, you know, Monday, it looked like the schedules would be fairly consistent. Like, as long as you keep the Rangers and the Hurricanes playing at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
But they don't. Right.
Basically by Monday, the Jets and Flames are already playing early in the day, and Edmonton, Chicago are playing last. And then from there, it kind of just goes all wonky. So, I mean, you can make the argument that with no consistent schedule for anybody, that's the most fair, or that it is fair. But still, you know, you're asking these guys to play at different times. I get they're all coming off of months of no sports, no activity of any sort. So that should kind of even things out. But you're still – the start times are just weird. Like, we've both covered national championships before.
Yeah.
And the start times can be kind of – like, there could be a pretty weird, quick turnaround. Even just in, like, conference playoffs, you play – you have a game that stretches into midnight, and then you have to come back for a matinee the next day. Like,
right, yeah.
These things, they're fine when they are concentrated in, you know, one series, or if they are kind of just like a flash in the pan, 2-3 day thing. But when it's consistent for months, like, this is going to be crazy. Like, having the game staggered the way that they are is 100% so every single game can be on television. That's the only reason. Because you don't need to get these games done in this time frame. You know, you could have an East Coast and West Coast game going at the same time, so you can get them all done in a short period of time.
Right.
To reduce the number of people that are going in and out and the amount of time that people are in that space. But they're basically just doing this for television. And, you know, damn the athletes. We want people sitting down in front of their TVs from 11 o'clock to, or from 12 o'clock to 10:30, probably midnight, watching hockey with Sportsnet running.
Well, I mean, they've already compared it to an idea of much like March Madness, the NCAA mm-hmm. basketball tournament, where it'll just be hockey all day. And I'm going, but that's not good for everybody.
Yeah. Like, one of the great things about watching playoff hockey or playoff basketball is that you spend the whole day, or you spend 2 days, waiting for the next game and talking about the next game and, like, talking with people about it and getting hyped for it and getting ready for it. Like, this is just going to be information overload.
Well, if you love hockey, it's going to be your sort of your dream sort of 2 months anyway, as things sort mm-hmm. of take off here. As you mentioned, Jets and Flames will have a 9:30 Central time start on August the 1st on that Saturday night, so they'll play till midnight. And then they'll jump to a 1:30 p.m. Central time start on Monday, August the 3rd, before finishing off their series again, or at least finishing off Game 3, could be the end of the series, against the Flames on the 5th, which will be a 6:45 start. Eastern time, 5:45 Central time. So kind of weird start times for that. Mm-hmm. But let's have a little fun then, because we got about 20 minutes to go here in the show. Let's have a little fun in terms of matchups. I'll run down these matchups. Give me your idea of who's going to win, who's not going to win here, Jason, and we'll see who advances right on and who doesn't. We'll start with the early game, then New York and Carolina. Who wins between the Rangers and the Hurricanes, and what might be one of the most entertaining series mm-hmm. of that early round anyway?
I was going to say, like, this is probably going to be one of the closest series. I actually see the Rangers coming out on top of this one.
Okay.
Artemi Panarin was statistically probably the best NHL player this season. He was an absolute dominant player at 5-on-5. You know, even with the lackluster lineup that the Rangers had this year, like, if this season we played a full 82, if the pandemic didn't happen, Artemi Panarin could have dragged the Rangers into the playoffs and would have won the Hart and the Walk. Like, he played so well. The Rangers are coming in. They've got great goaltending. The team is kind of coming together at the right time. And I just don't trust Carolina's goaltending to stand up to what the Rangers offer. I think it's going to be a high-flying, fast, high-scoring series, but I ultimately see the Rangers coming out on top.
See, I don't disagree with you on that. I think it will be a high-scoring. I think it will be a highly entertaining series. All those young players on Carolina are just ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. I do agree with you on Panarin's effect overall. I think the big thing for me, though, is it will come down to goaltending. I think if you're looking at, you know, Henrik Lundqvist sort of coming out of the blue and rescuing this team, that's not going to happen. It's going to come down to a couple of young goalies on New York side against a couple of semi-reliable goalies on the Carolina side. And legitimately, whoever gets the better goaltending stance will likely win this series. I mean, that's fairly obvious when it comes to stopping goals, but it might just be whoever stops more of the shots rather than the most shots. Mm-hmm. And that might be the key for either of these. In the end, I think that if the Rangers can figure out a little bit of their power play, get their power play really rolling, I think that they have a good chance of winning. So I'm going to go with the Rangers as well over Carolina, despite everything looking like Carolina should wax them. I think that, again, the Rangers will get the goaltending. Shesterkin is fantastic. And I think Panarin could be the difference maker in that series for sure. Yeah. Let's go to the next New York team, Florida and New York Islanders.
That's again, like it's gotta be the Islanders. I don't see any way around the fact that like what that team is, what they're capable of. They're just like Matt Barzal is just going to just be dominant. Like I'm not surprised that Florida made it in with the format, but I'm just like, they are just outmatched to me. I mean, they've got supremely talented players. Alexander Barkov is one of the greatest players in the NHL. Jonathan Huberto is absolutely fantastic. Like this is a team that's really good, but Bobrovsky has not been the goaltender that they're paying for. He's kind of having one of those down Bobrovsky years. And when you're playing a team like the Islanders, you really don't want that. So I see the Islanders taking this pretty well.
I don't disagree. I think you're right about Bobrovsky. I think he's been awful. I think that Varlamov, if he can have this, I mean, again, you look at Varlamov's numbers and you kind of go, eh. Thomas Greiss has better numbers than him in terms of the way that he's playing. Doesn't have the better goals against average or the save percentage, but in terms of wins, 16-9-4. As opposed to the 19-14-6 that Varlamov put up. But I look at that and I go, really? If we're talking about comparisons to Bobrovsky, yeah, you're right. There's no chance for them to keep up. I like the fact that Barzal's there. I think that Brock Nelson could be a significant factor in this series as well. I love the way that he plays, especially in bigger games. And I really think that a guy like Jordan Eberle and, you know, maybe an Anthony Beauvillier could really jump out here and make a difference as well. Barkov's great. Huberto's going to be fantastic, as we know. Beyond that, though, I don't know if there's enough scoring on Florida to really scare the Islanders when it comes to some of those shutdown lines. The Casey Zizekas line is fantastic. Leo Komarov, I mean, again, Uncle Leo is going to be your shutdown guy for sure. But I look at that and I go, Clutterbuck, Martin, like that whole wrecking ball line is just going to just destroy everybody on that Florida team if they try and start running around. So I'm with you. I think the Islanders are going to beat Florida. I think it's going to be a short series too. I just don't know if Florida has the scoring to really outlast a very tough, I'm going to say stingy Islanders team the way they play in the play. If they play like they did last year in the playoffs, yeah, like Islanders for sure. So Montreal, Pittsburgh.
Very easy. You gotta take Pittsburgh, right? Like you cannot argue against Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. Like this is an experienced team. This is a really good team. Everyone keeps talking about the drop off is gonna happen. I mean, they've got a fantastic young goaltender in Tristan Jarry. Like you really can't. It's hard to argue against Pittsburgh with like Montreal was coming into this. Like they were the 24th of 24 teams to qualify for this play-in. Like they had sold at the deadline. They were ready to just pack it in. Season was done. We'll see you guys next year. And now they're getting dragged into this playoff kind of kicking and screaming. Everyone's talking about if Carey Price gets hot and he can carry the team to the Stanley Cup final. I can see that, but I don't see them getting through Pittsburgh the way that Pittsburgh's set up right now.
I think that having Pittsburgh come back with a, I'm going to say a healthy team is scary. Jake Guentzel will be back, which is obviously another weapon for them to use out there. Riekela is going to be back as well. Like they're coming back basically with a healthy squad and far healthier than where they were when the season shut down. And I go, I don't really know if Montreal can handle all of that scoring and all of that sort of, especially if Montreal runs into a few penalty problems, like That power play is just dynamite with all the weapons they can put out there. Matt Murray looks like he's relaxed and ready. So does Tristan Jarry. I watched a little bit of their online practice the other day and their scrimmage or whatever, their inter-squad game. And, like, both goals. Like, again, you don't really see it that often, but, like, Matt Murray literally staring down people on breakaways and making saves was something that didn't happen prior to the lockout. He looked, or prior to the shutdown, not lockout, I guess, but shutdown. Everything looks different now for the Penguins, and maybe this is what they needed, is that break just to get everybody healthy and get everybody back on the same page. But yeah, I don't see Montreal hanging with them. Carey Price might be able to steal a game for them, but I can't see him stealing three out of these games. I think Pittsburgh wins that one as well.
I mean, I think out of all of the series for the play-ins, aside from the Rangers and Hurricanes, this is the one that I can see going the longest. I think the Rangers and Hurricanes will go the distance. I think Montreal and Pittsburgh will be close just because of, you know, what Montreal does offer in terms of their defense and Carey Price being there. But I just don't see them making it out of the series. Like, especially with Zucker and Marleau joining the Pens at the deadline and, you know, John Marino being John Marino, and this team just came together and they're all healthy and they're coming in at the right time. Like, as much as Montreal's going to give them trouble, they're not going to come out of this one.
Columbus and Toronto in Toronto. Obviously there's no home ice advantage, but Columbus and Toronto to play in the ACC.
I'm going to put this one as Toronto. It's going to be tight.
Ooh.
But I think that, you know, they're getting Ilya Mikheyev back. The defense is coming together. You've got kind of a good test. Like, this team has gone to a pair of game sevens in the first round against the Boston Bruins, who made it to the Stanley Cup final last year. And this is a team that's coming together a lot better. They've got Jack Campbell as the backup behind Freddie Anderson, so there is that cushion there. Obviously, Ilya Mikheyev is coming back. John Tavares is more settled. Mitch Marner is more settled. William Nylander has just looked absolutely dominant in the footage that we've seen. He was having a great season heading into that. And it's, again, you've got a team that's – everyone's getting healthy and coming in. Like, this might be the last gasp of the Toronto Maple Leafs that we're seeing. Like, there's going to be probably some guys shipped off at the end of this season. And I just don't know what Columbus can do to stop that. Like, it's been a surprising good season for Columbus. I just don't know how this is going to stack up compared to their performance last year.
I will say Tampa Bay as the factor that maybe, you know, can rattle a little bit of people here. It's going to be tough, though. And the reason I say that is only because they don't have a Bobrovsky who stood on his head like he did last year before leaving for Florida.
The good goaltenders, though.
Great goaltenders still. Nothing against, you know, Korpisalo or Merzlikins. Fantastic goaltending still. But I look at this and I go, legitimately, I don't know if they can outplay Toronto. If Columbus's goaltending can outplay Toronto's forwards. They have fantastic forwards on Toronto, as you were pointing out. You know, all the great players up front. I think this comes down to defense and goaltending for Columbus. Those guys stepped up huge last year in Tampa Bay. They got a bunch of goals from defenders last year in terms of guys like Savard and all sorts of, you know, Jones and Wawrinka and Werenski or whatever his name is, Wawrinski. I look at that and I go, that might be the big difference, is that they're going to need contributions from everybody on the ice. It'll be how well Toronto can manage that. Toronto, as we know, has a little bit of a leaky defense sometimes, but Anderson, if he can come out and play the way he does, Anderson might have. I think this series goes five on in terms of a surprising number, but I don't know if Columbus has enough firepower to get past a Toronto team that just simply is stacked all over the place at the top there. So, unfortunately, and against my better judgment, I'm also selecting Toronto. Chicago, Edmonton in Edmonton. Let's do the other home teams, so to speak.
You know what? This one's gonna go to the distance for me. Like, I know this one's gonna go the full length, five. But I think Edmonton is gonna squeak out the win here. Like, you just cannot argue against Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. This is another team that is on the rise. They're looking great. You've got a very young, physical back end that I think is coming together. The only question that I have is Mikko Koskinen Mikko Koskinen, or is he the guy that, you know, had pretty average numbers in the KHL? Like, what is he going to be? And the X factor really in this series for Chicago is their experience. Like, this is a team, an older team, an incredibly experienced team that was able to, again, get healthy. Guys were able to rest, kind of take a little break. Are we going to see what happens with Brent Seabrook coming back? Duncan Keith's able to get healthy. Jonathan Toews is able to rest. Patrick Kane able to get some, like, these are, this is a team that has not had a lot of rest in this last decade. So for them, I think that experience and, you know, also Corey Crawford coming in, able to get healthy, it's going to scare Edmonton, but I think they're going to be able to come out on top.
I am actually going to take the opposite. I think Chicago wins this series, and I hate to say that you're right, in that the experience plays a factor, but I think that seeing all of the guys that they have that they can roll out as healthy now, again, DeBrincat's there. You got, obviously, you've got Kubalik there in terms of another great player. Strome is there in terms of getting him going. Toews, you got to get him rolling again, but Kane will always be rolling. We know that he's ready to go. We know that DeBrincat can score on that other wing. I think that looking at the way that if Chicago's defense can hold up and somehow find a way to either, I mean, you can't really negate a McDavid or a Draisaitl, but really negate the other guys around them. I think there's a good chance that Chicago can win this, only because Corey Crawford is a much better goaltender than both Koskinen and Mike Smith. If Mike Smith gets hot, or if Koskinen gets hot, I could see it going the other way in quick fashion, just because Edmonton can score at will, and Chicago's goaltending doesn't usually rise to the occasion. But it, like you said, if Koskinen or Mike Smith is average, that's not good enough to beat Chicago, and I think that's going to be the big sort of factor here is one of those two goaltenders get hot enough to really carry the Oilers into the next round and get them on you know, maybe get some stuff going. The one player I think that's going to stand out that could make a huge difference depending on who and how he plays is Darnell Nurse, and I think that he has to shut down Kane if they have any chance of winning.
I mean, if you can do what I'm stretching pretty far back, but to 2013, it feels weird to say stretching far back to 2013, but with what happened with the Detroit Red Wings and how they got Jonathan Toews off his game, and he got frustrated and he was making mistakes, he was taking penalties, and he wasn't playing like Jonathan Toews. If Darnell Nurse can do something like that, get not just Patrick Kane, but the rest of the scorers from Chicago, get them off their game with his physicality and his penchant for being an agitator. Like, they're going to have a lot of success.
I got about 4 minutes remaining here, Jay. So we're going to run through these quick. Arizona, Nashville.
I'm going to come out and say it. Arizona's going to take it.
Look at you.
It's going to be close, but I think Arizona, like this Nashville, just, whenever they seem like they're getting it together, they stumble and fall. And Arizona, just this getting everyone healthy again, that's the big thing. And having the time off to get healthy, they're going to come in. And this is the team that can win games. And we're going to see them win games.
I agree with the Arizona. If they start Pekka Rinne, it's over quickly. If they start UC Saros, it might go a little bit longer. But I think Phil Kessel has a huge impact in this series.
Yeah.
Minnesota, Vancouver.
I got to say, it's going to be tight, but Vancouver, like, they are back in a big way. You know, Jacob Markstrom is going to play fantastically. You can never go wrong with Elias Pettersson, even in playoff hockey. Like, this is a Minnesota team that, granted, Kevin Fiala turned a corner this year. They're looking good. The future's bright for Minnesota, but the now is very bright for Vancouver. Like, this is their time to prove, to come in and say, okay, we're here, let's do something.
I agree. Vancouver's going to do well in that. Quinn Hughes, I think, is going to have a big impact there as well. And I think Brock, as much as they were talking about, you know, Brock Besser being in, I think he's got a lot to prove, especially if he's going to be traded. He's going to want to put on a show for people. So we'll see what happens on that one. Final series, obviously, Winnipeg-Calgary. How do you think that one goes down?
Well, it's going to go the full distance, I think.
Nice, yeah.
As much as I want to say Winnipeg, I'm still very concerned. I think the defense, has it to get done, has the pieces it needs to get done. I'm going to say Winnipeg based off of, you know, this is a team that has done it before. They've gone deep, not very often, but they have. And they just you can't argue against Connor Hellebuck. Like, the guy makes saves under pressure. He had the best save percentage on high-danger scoring chances. The defense was starting to come together. Dylan DeMello was just absolutely a godsend for that Jets defense. And for Calgary, like, I don't know about anybody else, but there's something wrong in that room. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong in the Calgary Flames dressing room, and it's left them snake-bitten the last few years. As good as they do during the regular season, as much promise as they show, something happens and they just crumble. And I don't know what's going on, but I feel like it's going to happen again.
I would agree. I think it's going to be Winnipeg. I think that having a full, healthy defensive squad, defensive core doesn't make them better, but certainly makes them more adept at being able to handle the Calgary Flames. Whether or not they go deep is a different question, but not having Johnny Gaudreau score the way that he scored this year, not having Johnny Gaudreau look like he did this year, certainly is going to affect Calgary. And then the missing piece, not that Hamonic was a monster player for them by any means, but having that reliable defenseman every day that was in the lineup to sort of, you know, really sort of buoy some of that, those minutes is going to start, maybe, I think is going to maybe affect Calgary. But I think this one, like I think you said, I think this one goes the distance as well. I think it's going to be a five-gamer for Winnipeg and Calgary. So we'll see if Winnipeg can come out on the right side of that. Just before we get out of here, Jake, we got about a minute left here. I want to make sure I get this in. The Edmonton CFL franchise is doing it. The Washington NFL franchise has done it. Today, the MJHL's Neepawa franchise is doing it. The NCAA has already forced many teams to do it. Question becomes, at what point and when does the Chicago Blackhawks decide to change their logo?
They are probably going to be the last team to do it. It's probably going to be a couple of years from now, but eventually they will. I think, you know, the tide of history goes in one direction, and intent does not erase impact. If an oppressed community is feels attacked or feels uncomfortable with something, who are we to say that their feelings are not valid?
And I think that's what it comes down. I know that people, they've said, well, we've contacted all the, you know, surrounding people that are involved in terms of all the decisions. But I think you're right. I think there's a time and a place. And certainly I know that they're holding on to the tradition and the history of that franchise. But I think you're right. It's time to change that logo, despite how iconic it might be. I know that, again, Portland uses that. The Sioux used to use a similar one in terms of where they were in North Dakota. They've already changed theirs. Again, the Neepawa Natives are changing theirs today. So I think it becomes just a matter of time at this point. And yeah, we'll see Chicago eventually change. It may not happen tomorrow. It may not happen next year, but it will likely happen at some point. So with that, we are just about out of time here. We are literally into the last few seconds here. Anything you want to promote before we get out of here, Jay, for another week?
Just my podcast. Let's talk about new episodes every Tuesday.
Nice. And that's on, what time is that on 101.5 UMFM? We have it on here as well, right?
Yeah, it's 11:30 to 12.
There you go. 11:30 to 12 on Tuesday. You can hear Jay talk about and break down all the issues in and around the world and everything that's going on and some of the high profile topics that happen in this world. Jason, one, thank you for joining us here on the Hockey Show again. We will have you on certainly before Canada West hockey gets back, but we'll get all that going as it comes up. So stay, keep yourself occupied and keep yourself open for more appearances here.
Perfect.
Awesome. Okay. With that, we are out of here on the Hockey Show for another week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned. Free Range Radio coming up next with Skippy here on 101.5 UMFM.